Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now! Indicted. Donald Trump has become the first U.S. president to face criminal charges after a New York grand jury indicts him for paying hush money to Stormy Daniels during the 2016 race. Trump is expected to surrender and appear in court Tuesday. We'll speak to Hofstra Law Professor Ellen Yaroshevsky on the indictment and the other criminal probes targeting Trump. Then to Nashville, Tennessee. Protesters flood Tennessee's state capitol building Thursday, demanding an end to gun violence following Monday's school shooting in Nashville that killed six, including 3 9-year-olds. We'll speak to an emergency room doctor who took part in the protests, as well as Manny Oliver. 5 years ago, his son Guac was killed in the Parkland school massacre. Last week, Oliver was arrested on Capitol Hill at a House hearing on guns. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A grand jury in Manhattan has indicted Donald Trump on more than 30 criminal counts related to hush money payments Trump made to adult film star Stormy Daniels during his 2016 presidential campaign. The charges come 4.5 years after Trump's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to charges of tax evasion, bank fraud, and lying to Congress about the hush money payments, which he says Trump directed him to make. It's the first time a former president has faced criminal charges in the United States. Trump is expected to surrender to authorities Tuesday. He responded to the indictment by releasing a long statement that read in part, quote, "This is political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history." We'll have much more on Trump's indictment after headlines. Senator Bernie Sanders and New York Congress member Jamal Bowman, backed by other progressive lawmakers, are calling on the Biden administration to reconsider U.S. policy towards Israel, quote, "in recognition of the worsening violence, further annexation of land, and denial of Palestinian rights," unquote. The letter, which has been circulating in both chambers of Congress this week to garner support, calls for a probe into whether U.S. weapons are being used to commit human rights abuses against Palestinians. Dozens of Jewish leaders and community groups are also supporting the letter. This comes amidst rare public rebukes of Israel by U.S. officials over its now-paused plan to gut the judiciary and its plans to illegally expand its settlements on Palestinian land. On Thursday, Palestinians marked Land Day with marches, protests and speeches across the occupied territories. Meanwhile, Israel's Law Professors Forum, representing 120 prominent law professors, has joined human rights groups in comparing Israel's treatment of Palestinians to the former apartheid government of South Africa. Earlier this week, the new head of Human Rights Watch, Tarana Hassan, urged the U.S. and other allies of Israel to help hold it accountable for its rights violations.
We see that this is not a human rights compliant government. This is a government that's actually on a rampage against human rights domestically against its own people in Israel, and they are pushing back.
In Mexico, authorities have arrested 5 out of the 6 people who had arrest warrants issued against them, including 3 officials from the National Immigration Institute and who face homicide charges after at least 39 asylum seekers were killed in a fire at an immigrant jail in Ciudad Juarez near the U.S. border. One of the survivors was also taken into custody, accused of starting the blaze Monday as dozens of migrants protested horrific conditions inside the overcrowded jail where they weren't provided water or food. Authorities began identifying the victims of the fire and notifying loved ones in their home countries thousands of miles away. Most of the dead were indigenous people from Guatemala. Others were from Honduras, El Salvador, Venezuela, and Colombia. This is Maria Miranda, the wife of 43-year-old victim Carlos Pacheco, a construction worker from El Salvador.
I hope justice is served. It is not fair how so many innocent people die. People who fight for their families, who fight to give them a better life, put food on the table, and make sure they have all they need. It is not fair. We need justice because they could have helped and they didn't. They didn't.
The Vatican has formally rejected the Catholic Church's doctrine of discovery used to justify European colonialism in Africa and the Americas, which dates from papal bulls issued in the 1450s. In a statement issued Thursday, the Vatican said the documents were, quote, manipulated for political purposes by competing colonial powers in order to justify immoral acts against indigenous peoples that were carried out at times without opposition from ecclesiastical authorities. Unquote. Many indigenous leaders welcomed the church's repudiation of the doctrine of discovery, which came 8 months after Pope Francis toured Canada and apologized for the Catholic Church's role in Canada's brutal Indian residential school system, where many students died. In Nashville, Tennessee, more than 1,000 protesters flooded the state capitol building Thursday, demanding an end to gun violence. The protest followed Monday's mass shooting at Covenant School in Nashville, where a shooter armed with 2 rifles and a handgun killed 3 adults and 3 9-year-old students. This is 16-year-old Tennessee high school student Chloe Spangler.
I have grown up all my life being scared of getting shot in school, and I really just want to fight for gun control because I'm tired of my life being put second to a firearm, and I want students to have the opportunity to be able to share their voices because they are the ones being affected by this issue.
The protest came as Tennessee's Republican-controlled legislature is considering measures to further deregulate guns. One bill would allow people as young as 18 to carry rifles and shotguns in public without a permit. Another would allow education workers to carry concealed handguns on school grounds with a permit. Today begins the funerals for those killed in the mass shooting. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Dr. Katrina Green, an emergency physician in Nashville, who joined Thursday's protest at the Tennessee Capitol. Today marks International Transgender Day of Visibility, a celebration of trans and non-binary people. Actions and protests are planned across the United States and worldwide, including here in New York, as communities fight intensifying discrimination, violence, and anti-trans laws. On Capitol Hill, progressive lawmakers have reintroduced the Transgender Bill of Rights. The measure, revived by Congressmember Pramila Jayapal and Senator Ed Markey, would, quote, provide protections for transgender and binary people, ensuring that everyone has the opportunity to thrive regardless of their gender identity or expression. Unquote. This year alone, there have been at least 450 anti-LGBTQ bills proposed in state legislatures and Congress. Washington, D.C.'s historically black metropolitan AME Church says it's seeking $22 million in punitive damages against the far-right Proud Boys group for destroying the church's Black Lives Matter sign in 2020 and terrorizing black communities. On Wednesday, church leaders and congregants testified in a D.C. court that the lawsuit seeks to permanently deter the Proud Boys from future attacks. In Russia, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich pleaded not guilty Thursday to charges of espionage during a brief appearance in a Moscow court. Gershkovich's lawyer said after the hearing he was not allowed in the courtroom and not allowed to see the charges against his client.
They held a quick hearing. I don't know how long it lasted. 3 minutes, 15 minutes, I don't know. And that's it. And after that, as far as I understand, again, I can only guess what position has been taken. Evan was taken away from here with the decision to hold him in custody.
Gershkovich was ordered to be held in custody until May 29th. The Wall Street Journal denied the allegations and is seeking his immediate release. The Biden administration called the espionage charges ridiculous and demanded immediate consular access to Gershkovich. Many foreign news organizations pulled out of Russia last year after President Putin signed a law making it a crime to disseminate what the Kremlin calls fake information about the invasion of Ukraine. The chief executive of Fox News ordered reporters at the far-right network to stop fact-checking Donald Trump's false claims about election fraud after Joe Biden's victory in 2020. That's according to an email from CEO Suzanne Scott, revealed as part of a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit filed against Fox by Dominion Voting Systems. In a message sent in early December 2020, Scott wrote of the fact-checking, quote, "This has to stop now. The audience is furious, and we're just feeding them material. Bad for business," she wrote. Another email revealed Scott encouraged Fox News to book Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow and a prominent election denier, saying he would get ratings. And the 2023 Izzy Award for Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media will be shared by The Lever, Mississippi Free Press, and journalists Carlos Ballesteros and Liza Gross. The Lever exposes corruption behind the nation's most powerful institutions, leaders, and companies, from dark money influence on the Supreme Court to Medicare privatization. Mississippi Free Press is a woman-led team reporting on racial and economic inequities and covered the ongoing water crisis in Jackson while fighting for transparency and public access to open records. Carlos Ballesteros' report for Injustice Watch exposed how two Chicago police officers issued arbitrary denials of U visas, which offer a path to citizenship for undocumented victims of crime, leading to a review of all denied U visas in Chicago and plans to rework the city's visa procedures. Liza Gross of Inside Climate News uncovered how oil companies have bought the ability to dump toxic wastewater on farms in Kern County, California. An award ceremony for the winners will take place in April. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll look at the indictment of Donald Trump, the first former U.S. president to face criminal charges. Stay with us. Performed by Robert Walsh. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald Trump was indicted Thursday, becoming the first former president ever to face criminal charges in the United States. Trump is expected to surrender to authorities and appear in court on Tuesday. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has not released the exact charges against Trump, but according to press accounts, the grand jury indicted Trump on more than 30 counts. Bragg's case focused on hush money payments Trump made to adult film star Stormy Daniels during his 2000 2016 presidential campaign to cover up his affair with her. The charges come 4.5 years after Trump's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to charges of tax evasion, bank fraud, and lying to Congress about the hush money payments, which he says Trump directed him to make. Cohen served time in prison. Donald Trump is still facing three other major investigations. Veteran prosecutor Jack Smith is leading a Justice Department probe into Trump's role in the January 6th insurrection and attempts to overturn the 2020 election. In Georgia, Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis is investigating Trump's effort to overturn Biden's victory in Georgia in 2020. And in New York, Attorney General Letitia James has sued Trump and his Trump Organization for fraud related to his business dealings. On Thursday, Donald Trump responded to the indictment by releasing a long statement that read in part, quote, "This is political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history," unquote. In recent weeks, Trump has railed against prosecutors investigating him. Trump recently posted a photo of himself holding a baseball bat next to a picture of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who's Manhattan's first black DA. Trump has also referred to Bragg as an animal. This all comes as Trump is running for the White House again. Under the U.S. Constitution, Trump can remain in the race even if he's convicted. In 1920, Eugene Debs ran for president on the Socialist Party ticket while in prison. To talk more about the indictment of Trump, we're joined by Ellen Yaroshevsky, professor of law at Hofstra University Law School. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor. Why don't you begin with your response to this historic indictment?
Relieved that this matter is finally going to be in a court of law rather than just in the media. Because it's so important to affirm the idea that we have a rule of law and that no one is above the law. So we'll wait and see what a jury does when they hear the facts and they apply the law.
Explain what we understand at this point. The indictment has not been unsealed. That apparently will happen on Tuesday when Trump will surrender to New York authorities, it's believed. He will have a mugshot taken. He will be fingerprinted. And he will be in court. It's expected. But explain what we understand these charges are about.
Well, we don't know for a fact, let's say, until the indictment is actually unsealed. What we expect they're about is that he falsified business records in the hush payments to regarding the Stormy Daniels matter. And as a result of falsifying those payments, he actually had the intent to influence the federal election. That makes it a felony. If it were just falsifying business records, which is really clear happened because Michael Cohen has served prison time in prison for that, that would just be a misdemeanor. But in order to elevate it to a felony, there has to be another crime, the intent to violate another crime. And the thought here is, and it's a thought, it's not proof, that the other crime would be to influence the federal election. What's interesting about this, Amy, even though that's an untested theory, that 3 days before this happened was the Hollywood Access tape. And so the idea here would be that because the Hollywood Access tape undermined his election prospects, that he really needed to engage in this conduct to make sure that his record of falsifying payments to falsifying hush money payments wouldn't be revealed.
Now, explain that further, because the hush payment to Stormy Daniels came less than 2 weeks before the election and just after that tape that was released.
Well, it didn't matter when the hush money payments were made, right? Michael Cohen talked about the checks. Trump had signed checks and that those were the ways in which they falsified the payments because they claimed they were legal expenses. They were not legal expenses. They were payments to Stormy Daniels. So that's the way that unfolded.
And Karen McDaniels, the Playboy model, who apparently also got hush money payments, talk about the charges And or we don't know what the charges are, but how this all relates.
Well, we don't know. But what we do know is we're looking at falsifying business records, and any of the payments that were made theoretically under, this is what Michael Cohen says, right, is they said that they were legal expenses. They were not legal expenses. They were payments made to ensure that both of those women did not talk and explain what had happened. That's why that's a misdemeanor to have done that. And when we said the indictment has up to 30 counts, that means 30 different charges, for each of those payments, for each check, that could be a different charge.
And her name is Karen McDougal. Earlier this month, Trump's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, spent several hours testifying to a state grand jury in Manhattan. He previously pleaded guilty to charges of tax evasion, bank fraud, and lying to Congress about the hush money payments, which he says Trump directed him to make.
This is not revenge, right? What this is about accountability. I don't want to see anyone, including Donald Trump, indicted, prosecuted, convicted, incarcerated, simply because I fundamentally disagree with them. This is all about accountability. He needs to be held accountable for his dirty deeds.
Talk about the significance of what he's saying.
Well, he's going to testify. His testimony is significant. Hopefully, there will be other witnesses who will testify as well. But a part of the significance is that he will be cross-examined, and his credibility will be put at issue, and that will be a significant issue before any jury. Michael Cohen's made a lot of statements. Michael Cohen spent time in prison. Michael Cohen was indicted during the Trump administration. So all of those will be factors as the jury considers Michael Cohen's testimony.
So can you respond to those who say that they feel that Donald Trump should be indicted, but for far more serious crimes, among them, for example, inciting the insurrection, and the significance of this being put forward, and then how strong this case is? I mean, we're talking about the credibility before a Manhattan jury. You have someone like Michael Cohen, who himself has pled guilty to perjury and who has served time in prison, being the person who testifies, along with Stormy Daniels.
Well, let me start here. Alvin Bragg is a very careful, diligent prosecutor. He's very experienced. He's been a federal prosecutor. He was a state prosecutor in the attorney general's office, where he investigated Trump. So coming into office, he knew very well, I think, what he was up against. He would not go forward, I believe, with an indictment unless there was significant evidence from which their office believes they can prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. There may be other more significant cases. Certainly the idea of an insurrection and trying to overthrow overthrow the government is a very serious charge, much more serious than this. But Alvin Bragg doesn't control that. He doesn't control the Georgia case that Fannie Willis is considering. As a prosecutor, you can only take the case that's before you, take the facts that you have and investigate those facts. So it could be that if the timing had been different, people wouldn't be questioning, why bring this case first? This is the case that Alvin Bragg has.
So let's talk about those other cases for a moment. You referred to them quickly, but what he's facing in this federal investigation in Washington, D.C., and what exactly Fannie Willis may bring charges against him for, the Fulton County D.A., and then in New York, the Attorney General, Tish James.
There are many, as you've pointed out, Amy, these three cases. So first of all, federal charges. Department of Justice brought in a lawyer, Jack Smith, a very experienced lawyer, who is examining the factors around the insurrection, what happened during the insurrection, Donald Trump's responsibility for it, classified documents. It's an ongoing and a sweeping investigation. We don't know what's going to happen. We do know that it appears that Jack Smith has been very diligent and forthright, going after witnesses, trying to ensure that the crime fraud exception, for instance, would allow certain people to come forward and testify, including Mike Pence. And so that's going on. We don't know when or if there will be an indictment in that case. So that's one. Fannie Willis had a grand jury impaneled, and the grand jury gave her a report that she's now looking at to determine whether or not Donald Trump, through his calls to Brad Raffensperger, trying to, quote, find 11,000 votes so that they could overturn the election in Georgia. That matter went before a grand jury in Georgia, and she's making a determination as to whether or not there will be an indictment in that case. A year ago, well, December of 22, Letitia James in New York filed a massive civil fraud case. It's fraud and other financial crimes against Donald Trump and the Trump Organization regarding billions of dollars as a result of overvaluing and undervaluing many of the properties of the Trump Organization and of Donald Trump. That matter is also proceeding. So we don't have a sense time-wise of when or if any of these other cases will proceed, whether there'll be other indictments, whether the Letitia James Attorney General case will go to a jury. That's all to be determined. All we know right now is, yes, there is one indictment. That's this indictment. And it's the first time that Donald Trump or any president will face criminal charges.
And even though it's the first indictment, it doesn't necessarily mean it could lead to the first trial. Is that right? And what does it mean if he has charges brought against him in the federal with Jack Smith, the Justice Department in Georgia and the state of New York? What happens then?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, certainly, just because there'll be an indictment and an arraignment, which is when Donald Trump will show up and plead not guilty, presumably, and be released, there'll be a lot of motions that will be made. There'll be a timeline set up for motions. These cases do not proceed quickly. These are white-collar fraud cases. They can go on for years. So we don't know when there will or if there will ever be a trial in New York. We also don't know whether Jack Smith will ever indict Donald Trump federally. But if so, the timing will have to be worked out. Obviously, you can't stand trial in two separate cases at the same time. So the courts, the judges will have to decide upon timing. The same is true with respect to Georgia. It may be that the Georgia case could proceed, if it's indicted, earlier than the New York case.
Donald Trump held his first major rally for the 2024 presidential campaign in Waco, Texas, last weekend, vowing to destroy the deep state and railing against prosecutors investigating his alleged crimes. This is what he said.
When they go after me, they're going after you. The only way to stop these arsonists is to rebuke and reject this evil persecution by sending us straight back to the White House to expel the communists and the Marxists and all of them in 2024.
Can you respond to what he's saying?
Well, he's asking for mob rule. He's asking us to undermine—this is not the first time—undermine the rule of law and not have a democracy, basically have a world in which Donald Trump is the only person whose opinion matters. We have a country, and we're trying to uphold democracy here. We're trying to uphold the rule of law. And so it's significant here that Alvin Bragg has brought this case, despite the fact that Donald Trump may continue to make such statements, despite the fact that there's going to be quite a reaction, I suspect, to Donald Trump's indictment. But we've got to uphold a system where there is a rule of law.
He showed video of the violent attack on the Capitol at the Waco rally. He also, of course, had tweeted that picture holding a baseball bat next to a picture of the Manhattan DA Bragg. Right now, the police department is preparing for next week, as he has made allusions to people gathering there, calling on every police officer to be wearing uniforms. Talk about what will happen on Tuesday. I mean, do you expect a perp walk? Do you expect him to be shown with his hands behind his back, handcuffed?
Donald Trump would probably to have handcuffs. He'd like that. He'd like a perp walk. I do not believe for a second that the DA is going to do that. The DA is being very careful about this, is being very sensitive, I think, about the ways in which he's going to be arraigned. They're going to make special provisions. The police are already called at him. If you go downtown Manhattan, it looks like they're preparing for a war zone. It's very disturbing. There's no defendant, I think, we know in history, who's ever a potential defendant, who's ever behaved in this fashion, calling out a mob. That said, there were not that many people there. Last Tuesday, when Donald Trump announced that he was going to be indicted, he wanted many people to come and demonstrate. There were not that many people. It's unclear how many people will be there this Tuesday, assuming he shows up. But the police will be prepared. The DA's office is prepared. New York City is prepared. We're not going to succumb to mob rule. We've got to uphold the rule of law.
Let me ask you about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who said Florida will not assist in an extradition request given the questionable circumstances at issue with this Soros-backed Manhattan prosecutor and his